So, you're here at last. Didn't I tell you we'd get you one day? Didn't I swear that day you rolled me over in the mud that I'd be even with you yet? Good heavens. You!
We present John Moffat as Julian Caird, Jeremy Clyde as Rodney Fleming, and Peter Salis as Detective Inspector Spears in Death at Broadcasting House by Val Gielgud and Holt Marvel.
So, I must throw away my pistol and my mask and say goodbye to the Scarlet Highwayman forever?
Q8A and fade up for closing music.
If you love me, my darling.
More than life itself.
Beloved.
Darling.
Fade 6A and Q announcements.
That was The Scarlet Highwayman by Rodney Fleming. Starring Leopold Dryden as the Scarlet Highwayman, Isabel Dryden as Camille Penshurst, with Stephen Druitt as Captain George Penshurst.
He needs to hurry it along a bit, or we'll be off the air.
It'll be fine.
Emily Dewhurst as Cynthia Harding, Gregory Hazlitt and Harold Spragg as two Bow Street runners, and Sidney Parsons as the jailer. The Scarlet Highwayman was produced by Julian Caird.
Oh. Red light off, speakers off, and that's it. 10:20.
Exactly.
We'd have overrun if Dryden hadn't speeded up in that last scene. What an evening.
He didn't do badly for a first broadcast. Distinguished as he may be in the theatre, must have been nerve-wracking for him.
And for the rest of us. One crisis after another. If I didn't have the best sound and control man in the business...
Does that mean the drinks are on me?
No, I mean it, Guy. If I couldn't rely on you, God knows what would happen. Sorry I had to dash off and check that return cue light... Trust it to fail tonight of all nights.
I coped quite well on my own. Pity you missed Parsons' finest hour, though.
How did the great death scene go?
Considerably better than it did at rehearsal. Parsons really got it this time. He died like a good 'un. Did exactly what you told him. I think you can be pretty pleased with yourself, even if you have got an extra grey hair or two.
Well, I suppose I'd better have a word with the cast and haul our beloved author out of 6A. And then what do you say to that drink?
You look as if you need one, Julian. I've never seen you as jumpy as you were tonight.
No, it's this infernal play. Wish to God Fleming had never written the damn thing or persuaded me to produce it. Have you got that spare script?
Here.
Thanks. If it wasn't Dryden doing his star turn or Evans pushing his oar in, it was Fleming kicking up a fuss about the way his lines were spoken.
He certainly set us a tough job. I don't think I've ever used every studio on the 6th and 7th floor before.
And 8A for the music. And announcements. I think he wanted to show me he could master the technique of broadcasting without any trouble at all. Rodney always was an arrogant devil. After this triumph, he'll be insufferable.
Is that why you hid him away in the 6A listening room?
I didn't want him in here. Actors are a curse, but authors are intolerable. Anyway, he wanted to see some of the play going on. Most of the big scenes were in 6A, so I thought it was the best place for him. Well away from me. And he was waiting for that damned call. 6A listening room's the only one with a telephone.
I think your next play should be written by an author who's been dead at least 100 years.
At least. Well, if you go and make sure there are no actors lingering in the studios, I'll go and congratulate dear Rodney. Add another layer to his ego.
Julian, what can I say?
Thank you for a brilliant production.
Oh, you turn my faltering steps.
Oh, no, please, Rodney, no false modesty.
Well, I couldn't have asked for it to be better done.
I couldn't have done it if you hadn't written it.
Mutual compliments done with?
I hope so.
Well, I'm sorry I was stuck in here. Miss seeing you play the dictator.
Well, I don't see myself as Comrade Stalin.
I was thinking of Herr Hitler, actually.
Ever the Marxist, Rodney. Coming down with me, I want to see the Drydens.
Oh, absolutely. I thought Leo was frightfully good, and, of course, Isabel, as always, was perfect.
I thought perhaps we could get them to come out to supper. I'm just waiting for Bannister. Oh, you might congratulate him. He did marvels on the panel.
Of course. Oh, and thanks for fixing that telephone call for me.
Julian, there's been an accident. Parsons in 7C. I think he's dead.
I came in to check the studio was empty, and there he was.
He's probably just fainted.
Not by the looks of him.
God, it's close in here.
We'd better not touch him, or anything else.
What do you mean?
I think he's been strangled. I think it's murder.
Good God. No wonder he played the death scene so well.
Julian.
Poor devil. God, I'd better go and tell the General what's happened. Meanwhile, Guy, keep the 6th and 7th floors clear, would you? I'll put someone on this door. Now, make sure nothing's disturbed. God knows what the General's going to say.
Come.
General, I'm sorry to bother you, sir.
Not at all, Caird. Come in. Just catching Henry Hall on top form tonight, and the audience sounds happy.
I thought you should know at once, sir, that...
You're as white as a sheet, man. Are you ill?
There's been an accident in 7C.
Accident? What sort of accident?
One of my actors...
Calm down, Caird. Tell me what's happened. Oh, we could do without this wretched noise. Sit.
Sir, we've just finished a play on the national wavelength, sir, The Scarlet Highwayman.
Yes.
One of the fellows in the cast was a man called Sidney Parsons.
Yes.
Bannister found him in 7C at the end of the show.
Yes.
You, sir?
Carry on.
He was dead.
Dead? Are you sure?
I know it sounds absurd, but there's every reason to suppose he's been murdered.
Murdered? This is fantastic, Caird. What have you done?
I've put a studio attendant on the door of 7C, sir. Higgins, a good man. And I warned my studio manager, MacDonald, on my way down here. Bannister's up there now.
Bannister?
Guy Bannister, my balance and control man. I told him to keep the 6th and 7th floors clear and asked MacDonald to phone the police.
You seem to have been pretty sensible. We'd better go up.
Yeah, I'll call a lift.
Lift? We won't wait for the lift. Heavens, man, if I can run up 7 flights of stairs, so can you.
Yes, General.
Let's get on, then. God knows what state of panic the actors will be in. Never can rely on actors in an emergency.
This is an outrage! Are my wife and I to be kept here all night as if we were a couple of disreputable chorus girls without so much as a by your leave? I insist upon some sort of explanation, MacDonald.
Leo, darling, can I get you another cup of coffee?
You can get me a taxi.
I'm afraid none of us can leave for the moment.
Is that the job of a studio manager, MacDonald? I know I'm new to this wireless game, but I didn't think you had the power to keep me against my will.
I'm so sorry. Leo isn't well.
You don't have to apologize for me, Isabel.
I understand.
Do you? I wish I did.
Please, sit down, darling. Stop pacing around. Oh, Rodney, can't you do anything?
You do look rather green, Leo. Shouldn't you sit down?
Huh? Well, yes, perhaps I will. It's the damned atmosphere in this place. I had to leave the studio during the play, get some fresh air. But I will have some of that coffee, MacDonald.
Of course. Mrs. Dryden? No. No, thank you, Ian. Rodney, can't you tell us what's going on?
I'm sorry, Isabel. I think we'll have to wait for Caird.
Damned unnecessary mystery. I'll have something to say to Caird, I promise you.
A killing in broadcasting house of all places. How was it the thing wasn't discovered until the end of the play?
Parsons was murdered in character during the play. Part of the story. He was alone in 7C.
Come along, Caird. Only one more floor to go.
Yes.
Don't stop now.
I was just thinking, do you realize that everyone who heard that play must have heard him die as it happened? Makes it pretty unique in the annals of crime.
We don't know yet. It is a crime. Don't jump to conclusions. Who's that? Thought no one was allowed to leave the 7th floor.
Higgins! What the blazes are you doing here?
Sorry, Mr. Caird.
Didn't I tell you to stay outside the door of 7C?
What's the meaning of this? Higgins, is it? Why have you disobeyed orders?
I didn't know.
Did you go into 7C?
No, sir. Of course not. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was important. I misunderstood you, Mr. Caird.
Misunderstood?
You must have understood.
I was off duty at the end of the play and had an important engagement. That's how it was.
I told you you weren't to leave that door till I came back.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
Well, it can't be helped. Let's get on.
No, just a minute, sir. There's something else I want to ask Higgins.
What's that, then?
You were on duty during the play, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Is this entirely relevant to the matter in hand?
Before the play started, sir, I asked MacDonald to put a man at the north end of the corridor on the seventh floor on the door leading out of the tower.
Yes,
if
yes.
If that door's not watched, you get people going through the tower corridor using it as a shortcut during transmission.
Very regrettable.
I had to go down to 6A from the panel room during the transmission because one of the return cue lights failed. I went along the seventh floor corridor and Higgins wasn't on that door. So, where were you, Higgins?
I was on the door all through the transmission.
No, damn it, I've got eyes in my head.
You've obviously been neglecting your duties this evening. You may find yourself in a very awkward position if you aren't completely frank with us.
I'm no liar.
Where were you when you should have been on that door?
Don't know what you mean.
Don't make things worse for yourself by lying.
All right. I'll tell you, sir. Suppose you'll give me the sack, but I'd have got it anyway after tonight. It's a girl. One of those girls who work in the basement canteen.
Go on.
We've been sweet on each other for quite a while, but it wasn't coming to anything, what with me being married, so yesterday she writes me a letter and gives me the chuck.
No bad thing by the sound of it.
I sent her a note asking her to come up and meet me in one of the offices on the seventh floor while the play was going on. I said to meet at 10 o'clock, and that's when I went to the office.
Damn fools, the both of you.
But she didn't come, sir. It's nothing to do with Effie. I swear she didn't come.
Very proper of her.
I waited till 10:20 when the play ended, then I went back to the door. I was there when Mr. Caird and Mr. Bannister came down from the panel room, wasn't I, Mr. Caird?
He was. If I hadn't left in the middle of the transmission, I'd never have known he'd gone.
Yes. Well, we'll discuss your outrageous conduct later, Higgins. Stay on the premises. I expect the police will want a word with you.
Police? I've not done nothing wrong.
Not saying you have. No time to discuss it now. Caird, I'm going straight up to 7C. I'll wait for the police there. You go along and see what the Drydens are getting up to. Don't want a riot on our hands.
I won't stay here a minute longer.
I'm afraid you'll have to, Mr.
Have to? How dare you tell me what I have to do?
Rodney, I do wish they'd let Leo go. He's been so seedy all evening. He wasn't a bit himself at dinner.
I'm sorry, Isabel. It's out of my hands. But here comes your knight in tarnished armour.
I'm sorry to have kept you all waiting like this.
Perhaps you can...
I haven't told them a thing.
I'm glad you've come, Julian.
Now, please, if you'd all sit down.
I've sent the other actors down to the fifth floor. Bannister's keeping an eye on them there.
Yes, thanks, MacDonald.
I thought they were best away.
I demand an explanation.
You mustn't mind, Leo, Julian. But do let him go now, even if you want to keep me. I'm afraid he's going to be ill.
Nonsense! Well, yes, but perhaps I will sit.
May I tell them now, Julian?
Tell us what?
Just for a minute, please. We won't be long.
I won't stand for it. All this mystery-making and humbug. I only did your infernal broadcast to oblige Isabel. She made such a point of it. And you too, Fleming. I've never believed in broadcasting for plays, but as you've written the damn thing for me, I wish to God I'd never touched it.
All right, darling. I'm sure Julian will tell us what's going on just as soon as he can.
I'm not used to this kind of behaviour, Caird, I can tell you. If this is the way you treat artists...
Good evening.
And who the hell are you?
General Sir Herbert Farquharson, Administrative Controller, Broadcasting House.
But then perhaps you can tell us what's going on.
I'm extraordinarily sorry you should have been inconvenienced like this. Let me introduce these gentlemen who have a few questions to ask all of you.
Questions? What right have they to ask us questions? Who the devil are you?
My name is Spears, Detective Inspector Spears of Scotland Yard. This is my colleague, Detective Sergeant Ring.
Oh, God.
Good evening.
I'm glad to see you, sir.
Scotland Yard, indeed. So, I've been kept waiting here because some lady has mislaid a handbag or a 10-shilling note's gone missing from the gentleman's lavatory.
No, it's rather more serious, I'm afraid.
Luckily, one of the board of governors of this corporation is a member of my club. You've not heard the last of this, I can tell you.
Mr. Dryden, I've apologized for inconveniencing you. You'll realize why I had to if I tell you that one of your fellow actors, Sidney Parsons, met his death in one of the studios tonight.
Oh, no!
Steady, Isabel.
Well, needless to say, I'm distressed to hear this. But it seems to me you're turning tragedy into farce. Are my wife and I to be questioned because some poor devil has been unlucky enough to die on your premises?
I think...
Or perhaps you believe it was murder and I'm to be arrested on suspicion.
It may be murder.
Well, Suppose it is murder. Do you suggest I or my wife had anything to do with it?
I suggest nothing at this stage, sir.
I can tell you this, Inspector Spears. You've no right to detain us unless you choose to put us under arrest. And I don't imagine you're impudent enough or stupid enough to do that. I'll be glad to be at home to you tomorrow morning. And not before 11. Isabel?
Leo, please.
Now you'll find our address in the telephone book. Good evening.
Tomorrow, Inspector.
Isabel!
I really feel one should applaud.
Shall I stop them leaving the building?
No, I think I'll let him cool off. There's plenty to see here. I'll go back up to 7C, hear what the police surgeon has to say.
Then may I go home, Inspector?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like you and Mr. Caird with me. I need to know how things look from both your points of view.
I don't know that I feel up to seeing the body again.
Come on, Julian, you're as excited as I am by all this. Lead on, Inspector.
You hardly needed to disturb my beauty sleep for this one, Spears.
Really, Doctor?
Well, I suppose there'll have to be an autopsy as a matter of form, but the thing's as clear as daylight.
Well?
Strangled from behind. The fellow who did the strangling wore gloves. I suppose there's not much argument about when he was killed.
No, I can time it to the second.
Well, don't jump to conclusions, Mr. Caird, please. Sergeant, make a thorough search of the studio and turn out Parsons' pockets.
Sir? Can't you cover him over?
No. Not just yet, I'm afraid. So you think you heard him die?
Of course. All our plays go out live. Millions of listeners must have heard him being strangled.
And at present, I'm looking for facts. How long's he been dead, Doctor?
I've told you before, Spears. Only fools pretend to answer that question accurately.
As accurately as possible.
Well, he's not been dead for more than 2 hours, I can tell you that. It didn't take much killing, poor little brute. Wretchedly undernourished, bad physique, and the worst set of teeth I've seen for years.
I knew Parsons was in rather a bad way.
Really, Mr. Fleming?
Yes, I knew him slightly. Recommended him for the part because he was so damned hard up.
Thank you. Well, I'd like to hear more about that later. Anything else you can tell me, Doctor?
Nothing useful.
All right, I'll arrange for the removal of the body and see if the autopsy tells us anything more.
It won't. Good night.
Good night, Doctor.
Not my idea of a police surgeon.
Well, they come in all shapes and sizes. Found anything, Sergeant?
Not too much, sir. This room's as bare as a board. Carpet's too thick to take any impression. Whoever did this job knew too much to leave anything behind him. Here are the contents of the pockets.
How pathetic they look.
What do you mean?
A few pennies. Half-empty packet of cigarettes. Shabby pocketbook. Who'd want to kill a man who had so little?
Oh, but these may be clues, Julian. A pawn ticket? Some keys? Keys to what? And what had he pawned?
I suppose you find it interesting, Rodney. Personally, it gives me the creeps. Spears fingering that poor devil's things as if he was choosing kidneys for breakfast.
Make a note of the contents, Ring.
Sir?
What's this, Mr. Caird?
Oh, that's the script of the play. The actors read their parts, you know. They don't have to learn them.
It was lying just beside the body, sir.
Would this be a copy of your play, Mr. Fleming?
The Scarlet Highwayman? Yes, it's my own meagre efforts.
That's what I thought. Is it usual for your actors to mutilate their scripts, Mr. Caird?
Oh, they scribble on them sometimes, make notes in the margin. Why?
Well, either Mr. Parsons or someone else has torn half the front page of this away. It was torn in a hurry. The edges are jagged.
Is that significant?
Well, I just wondered why it was done and who did it. Well, I think we can send everyone home. Except for you two, gentlemen, if you wouldn't mind.
Looks like we're not going to get much sleep tonight.
Oh, I don't know that I'd be able to sleep.
When I've finished in here, I'd like you to tell me a bit about exactly how you handle a broadcast play.
Julian can lead the conducted tour. It's quite exhausting, I promise you.
And this is my office. Which ends the tour, I hope.
Yes, I see what you mean by exhausting.
I must walk miles, whole buildings like a maze.
Well, I wanted to show you everything.
Yes, thank you. It was invaluable.
And you can blame Rodney for writing such a damnably complicated play. He put every trick and gadget he could think of into the script.
Just to put you on your mettle.
If I could see those studio plans...
Oh, yes, of course. They're in my desk somewhere.
It'll make things clearer for me.
Here we are. Floors 6, 7 and 8. The main studios we used for the Scarlet Highwayman were on the 6th floor, 6A through to D. 6A actually stands on 2 floors, the 6th and 7th, so the 6A listening room is on the 7th floor. Parsons was in 7C, while I was tucked away on the 8th floor in the dramatic control room.
Exactly why did you need so many studios for this production?
Because I'm an awkward devil who likes to make Julian's life hell.
Exactly. One of the reasons we use several studios is to get different acoustic effects for each scene. 7C, where Parsons was, is built to get the effect of a closed room, or if you add an echo from the echo room, a dungeon, which is where Parsons was murdered in the play. And, well, in reality, I suppose. In a fairly large studio like 6A, you can get the effect of greater space. We needed that for the ballroom scene, for example. And then sound effects, gramophone effects, and the orchestra all have a studio of their own.
And you sit up in the control room away from it all?
Yes. That's why I need a studio manager like MacDonald to see everything is in order and the actors are behaving themselves in the studio.
And MacDonald would have been present with the actors during the entire play?
If he was doing his job.
Might he not have been?
Oh, no. Ian MacDonald's utterly reliable.
Unlike this light, which gave you problems.
The return cue light from 8A, yes. Yet when that failed, I had to rush down to 6A to make sure the lights there were in working order. MacDonald was due to give me a light later in the play, cue for some rather complicated scene changes.
For mea culpa once again.
So you left the control room to go down and check the light?
Yes.
At about the time of the murder?
Yes, it must have been.
And where exactly did you go?
I went down the staircase from the DC panel room to the 7th floor, then along the passage which leads into the tower, and down the central corridor.
So Studios 7B and 7C would have been on your right?
Yes. I noticed Higgins wasn't on guard outside the door leading into the tower on the 7th floor, but I really only noticed it subconsciously. It didn't really strike me at the time.
And you didn't look into 7C?
Well, obviously not. I was in a hurry. I bolted straight down the tiny spiral staircase from the 7th floor to the 6th. I checked the light circuit with the engineer and went back up again.
And did you see anyone?
Well,
yeah.
I don't want to lead you to draw any false conclusions.
I should tell him, Julian, if it gives you an alibi.
I don't know that it does, but just at the top of the spiral staircase, I saw Leo Dryden coming along the 7th floor passage from the direction of the lifts.
Did he have any business being there?
Not that I can think of.
Did you speak to him?
I asked him what the devil he was doing out of the studio. He said he felt ill and needed some air.
Did he look ill?
He looked ghastly.
Nerves, I expect.
Well, couldn't he have got fresh air on the 6th floor? I mean, why should he have gone up to the 7th?
I can't possibly answer that.
No. Well, perhaps Mr. Dryden had better answer that question himself.
I wish you luck.
And during the entire broadcast, you were in the 6A listening room, Mr. Fleming?
I was.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. Rodney was on the phone when I put my head round the door just before going back up to the DC panel room, and the call must have come through before I'd first gone down.
It was my dear brother ringing from Leeds. One of my plays is touring, and George had some problems to discuss with me. He must have been on the phone for ages. But I'm sure you'll check up on that.
I will, Mr. Fleming.
Come in.
Come in.
Oh.
Could I have a word, sir?
Yes. Certainly, Ring. If you'll excuse us, gentlemen.
Constable Swift has found something in one of the ashtrays.
Yes?
It's being put in a bag now for forensics. It's a torn piece of paper, screwed up like a spill, and shoved into one of those funnel ashtrays in the listening room outside 7C. One end's charred. Looks like someone tried to set fire to it, push it into the ashtray.
Where, unfortunately for him, it went up.
It had some writing still visible. As far as we can make out, just three words. Your darling Isabel. Seems to be in Parsons' handwriting. Matches notes we found in the pocketbook.
The missing piece of Parsons' script.
Looks like it.
Right. Let me see it as soon as forensics finish with it.
Sir?
Oh, well, I'm sorry about that, gentlemen.
Oh, not at all. Sounded intriguing. Couldn't hear a thing, unfortunately.
Look, I don't know about you, but I'm starving, and I could do with some coffee.
Oh, me too, if we're going to be under cross-examination for much longer.
Not for much longer, but I'd welcome some supper.
Right, I'll go down to the canteen and order some food.
Yeah, make mine ham sandwiches.
Inspector?
Whatever's convenient.
Right.
I won't be long.
Inspector, you don't really think Julian had anything to do with Parsons' death, do you?
You know Mr. Caird well.
I've known him for years. We were struggling actors together, shared many a dingy set of digs before we both saw the light. You can't think he's involved.
At this stage, I've a completely open mind.
So we're all suspects. How exciting.
Excuse me. Oh, hello, Evans.
Oh, you cared.
What on earth are you doing here at this time of night?
Taking the lift, as I assume are you.
Yes. Sorry.
Going down?
Canteen.
I heard your play tonight. I'll admit you can handle that stuff, Caird. But how you can bring yourself to put it on at all beats me.
My dear Evans, I don't want to be offensive, but sometimes, and particularly when I'm as tired as I am now, I wish you'd mind your own business.
As a matter of fact, as head of research and publicity, it is my business. I've got to get together some guff for the damn thing when it's rebroadcast on the Empire Service.
Rebroadcast?
For reasons best known to our colonial friends, the Empire Service Blatner-phoned your production. They seem to like that sort of thing.
Of course.
Is that important?
It might be.
Must I ask why?
You'll know all about it tomorrow morning. I'm sorry, Evans, but we're going up again.
Blatner phone?
Yes, it's a system of recording a production on steel tape so it can be rebroadcast later.
So my masterpiece isn't lost in the ether.
No, but don't you see what it means?
We can hear the death scene again.
Over and over again, as often as you like.
I wonder if the murderer thought of that.
How soon can you arrange for me to hear the recording?
I'll have a word with the General. I'm sure we can arrange something for tomorrow night. Is that soon enough?
Yes, I think so. Well, food or no food, I suppose I really must let you go. I think we all need our sleep.
Well, you certainly will, Inspector. If you're seeing Leo tomorrow, you'll need all your wits about you.
Inspector.
Oh.
I'm sorry to have kept you.
Oh, please don't be. I've occupied my time leafing through your husband's cuttings books. I hope you don't mind, Mrs.
Not Ryan. At all. We're terrible ones for keeping every single notice, however bad the play. Oh. Won't you sit down, Inspector?
Oh, thank you.
I can't tell you how dreadful I'm feeling about all this.
Of course, it must have been a great shock.
Yes.
It was actually your husband I came to see this morning.
I'm afraid he can't see you.
Can't, Mrs. Dryden, or won't?
You're thinking of his attitude last night. Please don't. Leo's rather used to getting his own way.
Exactly.
And he was ill. This morning he didn't feel equal to getting up. I've rung his doctor. He's coming to see him before lunch.
Your husband must realise he'll have to tell us what he knows about this matter. If not to me, then to the coroner.
But he doesn't know anything. He was in the studio all through the play. He was feeling wretchedly ill. You must have seen for yourself. He was in pain. He was far too anxious about lasting through the broadcast to pay attention to anything else.
Well, perhaps you'd remind him he'll have to give evidence at the inquest. It might be to his advantage to see me beforehand. Meanwhile, I'd like to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind.
Of course. But I'm afraid there's nothing I can tell you. Do you mind if I smoke?
No, by all means.
Thank you.
First of all, Mrs. Dryden.
A notebook. Very formal.
Well, this is a formal interview.
Yes.
Did you know Sidney Parsons?
As an actor, yes.
You'd acted with him before?
No, never. I only meant I knew him as an actor. He'd been on stage for some time. And I think I'd heard of him as a member of the Thespian Club.
Did you like him?
It was hardly a question of liking. I'd only seen him in the course of this play. We didn't have any scenes together.
I see. And nothing happened during rehearsals to give you the idea any other member of the cast disliked him?
No. He was a quiet, rather shabby little man. I don't think he spoke much to anyone. He spent most rehearsals sitting about reading a newspaper.
There's no need to be nervous, Mrs. Dryden.
Nervous? I'm not in the least nervous. Why should I be?
Have you any idea what upset your husband last night?
Upset? Oh, do you mean what did he have for dinner?
Yes, if you think it was the food that upset him. It seemed to me emotional rather than physical. Are you on good terms with your husband?
You've no right to ask me that. Leo and I have been married almost 5 years. Stage marriages seldom last that long if they're unsuccessful. Leo's temperamental, like all great artists. I'm not pretending we're candidates for the Dunmo Flitch, you know.
In fact, your husband's inclined to be jealous. I think I've read gossip to that effect.
A man who's in love with his wife should be jealous. Don't you think so? But he wasn't jealous of Sidney Parsons.
And nothing happened last night to upset him, apart from the food. I'd much rather hear it from you, Mrs. Dryden, than from your servants.
Well, I will tell you. But don't draw any false conclusions from it, because it's absurd. My husband and I did quarrel at dinner, nothing serious.
You had what some people call words.
Oh, it was only that someone had written me a silly letter, and I was foolish enough to show it to Leo. He lost his temper. He's often touchy in hot weather. He rather implied it was my fault that anyone should have written me such a letter. We were both nervous about this play, really. We'd never done any broadcasting before. We got rather childishly heated about it.
This letter, was it a love letter?
I suppose you might call it that.
Would you mind showing it to me?
I'm afraid I tore it up.
Was the letter written in answer to one of yours, Mrs. Dryden?
No. It was just a silly sort of letter any actress is liable to get from a perfect stranger. How can any of this affect the horrible thing that happened last night?
Mrs. Dryden, I sympathise with you, but I have to say that active hindrance on your part might be construed as participation in the crime.
I don't know what you mean.
Your husband refuses to see me.
I told you, Inspector...
It's possible he may be ill. I'll be able to judge that when I speak to his doctor. And you, probably from the best of motives, are doing your best to mislead me.
Mislead you?
You said your husband was in the studio during the whole of the broadcast. I know for a fact he wasn't. You only admitted under pressure that he was a jealous man. But I know his jealousy is one of the principal topics of theatrical London. Again, you only admitted under pressure that you'd quarrelled with your husband.
Mr. Spears, I don't like being called a liar to my face.
I'd like you to look at this letter, Mrs. Dryden.
What's this now?
It's one of three letters from you we found among Parsons' papers. That is your handwriting. Do you still deny it was in answer to this letter that the letter came which you showed to your husband, which caused the quarrel?
You had no
Parsons
right to...
Parsons was, in fact, blackmailing you. Do you deny that?
What do you want from me?
Oh, nothing more at present, but I'd like to speak to your husband as soon as possible.
I'll talk to him. Would this evening do?
No, not this evening. This evening, I fancy I'm going to hear a murder being committed.
Oh, damn. Damn the play, damn Rodney, damn everything to hell. Come in. Oh, Guy.
Are you busy, Julian?
I should be. I should be drawing up a list of productions for the last 3 months of this year. Somehow I can't concentrate.
Have you seen the reporters outside?
I had to battle my way through them to get in the building.
We're in all the newspapers. Headline news.
Death at Broadcasting House. It's irresistible. Unfortunately, it doesn't help anyone in the department to do their job this morning.
I've been thinking about last night's business.
Oh, you surprise me.
No, I have. And I don't understand the method of your friend, the detective. If I was handling the case...
Are you supposing to do his job for him, Guy?
Of course not. But there are one or two things.
All right, Guy, I'm not going to get any serious work done this morning. Give me your thoughts on the mystery.
Well, first of all, that man Higgins. He hasn't shown up at all today.
He's probably overslept.
He might have. But I had a word with MacDonald.
Oh, you have been busy.
Apparently, Higgins had a flaming row with Parsons during rehearsals for The Scarlet Highwayman.
Huh? Well, go on.
It was the third or fourth rehearsal. The first day you stopped rehearsing the cast in the studio and came up to the control room. You know that rule about not taking hats and coats into the studio?
Never understood it.
No, well, it seems Parsons took his into 7C. Higgins saw them and tried to take them downstairs to the cloakroom. Parsons turned on him, used some pretty filthy language, nearly threw him out. Higgins told MacDonald all about it.
You tried to pin the murder on Higgins?
I'm not trying to pin it on anyone, but it's a bit queer. He wasn't on the door during transmission. He didn't stay in Guard 7C after the murder. He was looking like death last night, and now he doesn't turn up this morning.
He had a perfectly good story about the girl.
From what you told me, I don't think it's either perfect or good.
Hmm. Well, is that the full extent of your thoughts?
Not quite. This Blattner phone recording.
Hmm?
There might be a clue on the steel tape.
I imagine that's why Spears wants to hear it.
Yes, but would he pick up a clue? He's not used to just using his ears, is he?
But you are.
It's my job.
All right, Guy. You can come along to the replay of the recording tonight, but don't tread on the inspector's toes.
Right.
For all his charm, I don't think Spears is a man to cross.
I can tell you, Caird, it's been an awful day. The governors are being difficult, of course, and the press are entirely irresponsible, as usual. Now, this infernal Blattner phone business...
It shouldn't take long, sir.
Is it really necessary to have all these people here just to listen to this recording?
Well, that was my decision, I'm afraid. I thought Fleming should be here. It's his play, after all. And Bannister's more accustomed to hearing Blattner phone recordings than anyone else. He might spot something we'd miss.
Very well. As long as the inspector's happy. Ring up the control room and let's get on with it.
They're preparing the steel tape now.
Come...
Oh, General Farquharson, yes, I'm sorry to give you another late night.
Think nothing of it, Inspector. We're here to help the police in any way we can.
Well, if we're all ready, perhaps we could hear the recording.
Couldn't we listen to my play from the beginning, so the Inspector gets the full flavour?
I don't think that's entirely necessary, is it, Inspector?
Perhaps not.
No, I'm sure Rodney wasn't being serious. Guy, are you ready?
I think so.
Now, quiet, everyone. It's started.
What's the music?
The end of the previous scene, the ballroom scene.
That's where I faded over from 6A and 8A into 7C, where Parsons was.
So, you're here at last. Didn't I tell you we'd get you one day? Didn't I swear that day you rolled me over in the mud that I'd be even with you yet? Good. Evans, you!
Is that it?
Well, I'd call that pretty average gruesome.
Yes.
Is there anything more we could do for you, Inspector?
I'd like that piece of steel tape sealed up and kept so I can hear it again if I need to. Can that be arranged?
Certainly. According to Evans, it wasn't good enough for the Empire Service after all, so you can mutilate it as much as you wish. I'll give instructions to the Blattner phone engineers myself. I'm not going to ask you now if you've learned anything from this experiment, but I'd be glad if you'd call me in the morning.
Of course.
Then I'll say good night to you all.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, sir.
Did you get anything out of it, Spears? Personally, I was damn nearly sick. Poor bloody little man.
Did you pick anything up?
Well, the only thing that struck me was I'd never heard the scene played so well.
What about you, Mr. Fleming?
All authors are the same, Inspector. They only notice one thing, the way actors and producers mutilate what they write.
What do you mean?
Well, it's not important, but as I wrote the scene, after the words, "I'll be even with you yet," there was a pause, and then, "You, the Scarlet High..." And then the jailer was strangled in a mass of horrible gurgles.
Well, I cut the Scarlet High myself. I thought it weakened the end of the speech.
And you don't think Good Evans weakens it?
I didn't put that in. Parsons wanted to say Good God. I told him that wasn't acceptable. I suppose he substituted Good Heavens.
Paid for misreading the author with his life.
Oh, shut up, Rodney.
Thank you, gentlemen. I think that's cleared up the point.
Is that all? No sudden revelations?
Bannister, you're an incorrigible romantic.
Well, there may be something on the recording. We just have to find it. Any ideas, Mr. Bannister?
Nothing at the moment, Inspector.
Mm. Are you going back to Scotland Yard, Inspector?
Yes, I've one or two things to tidy up before I get home.
Well, what about you, Julian? Can I give you a lift?
No, there's something I want to do in my office before I leave. It'd be useful if you came along, Guy, if you're not too tired.
No, not at all. I have a feeling I won't get a proper night's sleep till this case is over. I felt such a damned fool the way Fleming laughed.
No, I wouldn't take much notice of Rodney. He puts on a show of not caring very much, but underneath it all... I don't think he does care very much. Except about his career.
You know him better than I do.
Yes. But despite your caution a moment ago, have you an idea?
It's not really an idea. But it seems to me there are only two real suspects. Higgins and Leo Dryden.
And myself?
Two serious suspects. Don't you agree?
I'm not sure. Rodney has an alibi, and Isabel didn't leave the studio, if we can believe MacDonald.
And there's no reason not to.
No, I suppose not. And he's given an alibi to all the other actors in the cast.
So, we're left with Higgins and Dryden.
Hmm. Which do you favour?
Well, I can't really believe Dryden would kill anyone.
I'm inclined to agree, despite the idiotic way he's behaving with the police.
But Higgins, that story about his girlfriend Effie in the canteen is as thin as tissue paper. And he quarrelled with Parsons. He lied when you confronted him, and now he's disappeared.
Well, you can theorise as much as you like, Guy, but what are you going to do? Track Higgins down?
I might take a cast in the direction of his home.
As a matter of fact, I might do a bit of amateur detection myself.
I thought this whole thing sickened
you. It does. I'd like it resolved. But I'm not at all sure the inspector takes any of us entirely seriously. Any suggestion we make might just be cast aside. I asked you to stay on tonight to give me a hand.
With what?
Gloves.
Gloves?
The murderer wore gloves. What happened to them? Would he, or just possibly she, risk slipping them into their pocket when the crime might be discovered at once and a general search made? Has Spears looked for them? Are they tucked away somewhere on the seventh floor, somewhere where the police haven't thought to look? Huh? What do you say to a search?
Now? This late?
Not the best time. Building's almost empty. We won't be disturbed. Are you game?
I certainly am.
Good, because I think I know where they'll be.
How on earth?
There's a cupboard on the seventh floor, built into the wall. Higgins keeps his cleaning stuff in there. When the door's closed, you wouldn't know there was a cupboard, but Higgins usually leaves the door open. It wasn't open last night. I think it's worth a look.
Lead on. I'll be right behind you. It's eerie without people about.
There's no reason to whisper.
I think I'd rather. What's that?
It's just a cat. Oh. There are still two of them left from the tribe who moved in when the place was being built. Now, come on. This is the way I came last night.
Julian, There's a light. 6A listening room.
There shouldn't be anyone there.
Higgins, come to retrieve his gloves.
Let's find out.
All right. What do you think?
What the hell?
Evans, what in God's name are you doing here at this time of night?
Suppose I ask you the same question.
We're just... I don't propose to enter into a slanging match with you, Evans. Departmentally, I'm responsible for what you do in this part of the building.
Well, if you're going to drag red tape into
I'm not dragging in anything. But you can tell me, or explain it to the controller in the morning.
Is it necessary for Bannister to be here?
I'm sorry, should I go?
No, stay here, Guy. I'm sure Evans can tell us both what he's doing rooting about in that cupboard.
Criminology happens to be a hobby of mine.
Yes?
You can't expect me not to take advantage of it when a murder's been committed in the building where I actually work. It's a chance in a million.
This murder's no business of yours.
As much mine as yours. Or are you pretending you came up here to see if any more dead bodies were lying about in your precious studios? I got hold of one of the police photographers. Only cost me 10 bob to get a very fair resume of the police surgeon's report.
But what were you after in that cupboard?
If you must know, Bannister, a pair of gloves.
Gloves?
It's the cupboard where Higgins keeps his cleaning stuff. I know he didn't turn up this morning, so the cupboard hasn't been disturbed since the murder.
How did you know he didn't come in today?
You've talked of nothing else, Bannister.
Sorry, Julian.
Can't be helped. Are you trying to pin this thing on Higgins?
Higgins? If Higgins had done it, I wouldn't be looking for the gloves in his cupboard. Unless he was insane, he'd hardly put them in his own cupboard, would he?
Unless he had no time to do anything else.
They're in here somewhere.
I think you should leave this to me.
God, it's dusty.
It makes sense, you know. The murderer comes out of 7C. He can only leave by two doors. Either through the door that leads into 7B, and that door's solid, so he wouldn't know if anyone was on the other side. But the door into the passage has a glass panel, so he could check for people. Then all he has to do is slip out here, chuck the gloves into the cupboard, slam the door, and go back wherever he came from.
Do shut up, Bannister.
Wait, there's a space behind this shelf. Give me that torch, Guy.
I'll look. I've got a longer reach than you, Guy. Yes, here they are.
Good for you.
Good God, look at them. Black, stitching, scalloped, gauntlet wrists. I think we all know who these belong to.
We can't be certain.
They're Dryden's gloves, affected, extravagant idiot. Fancy having things like this made for you.
A man can be affected and extravagant without committing murder. Do you seriously suspect Leopold Dryden?
Suspect him? It's as plain as a pikestaff. He's got just the sort of limited intelligence combined with the colossal vanity that all the showy murderers have. Rude, domineering brute.
He's quite a good chap if you take him the right way.
I don't call a man a good chap when he quarrels with his wife in front of her friends. The man's a cad.
I didn't know you were a friend of Isabel's.
I've known her for some time. I think I can say I know her considerably better than you do, cad.
Then you won't want to cause her pain.
But what are we going to do with the gloves?
We obviously have to hand them over to the police.
Don't take too much on yourself, cad. I'll take them to the police myself. As for giving Isabel pain, it would be the best thing that ever happened to her if Leopold Dryden was hanged as high as Haman. I'll say good night to both of you.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
What's that guy?
Evans planted the gloves himself, just to implicate Dryden.
Yeah, it's possible. But knowing Leo, he'll get himself hanged without any help from Evans. Unless Spears can find a better candidate.
Mr. Fleming's here to see you, sir.
I think I'll let him wait for a bit. I've been going through my notes ring. No further forward, really.
It's a tough one, this.
Well, there are too many suspects. Higgins, Dryden, of course. Caird. Fleming himself, except his alibi seems to be cast iron.
The stage doorman at Leeds confirmed the brother's call, and the timing lets him out.
Together with the switchboard girl at Broadcasting House, confirming they were chatting away whenever she happened to check if the line was clear. Still, I'm keeping him as a possible. Any ideas yourself?
Well, those letters we found at Parsons Diggs could put Isabel Dryden on the list.
Well, she certainly went as white as the walls of her flat when I showed her her own letter. MacDonald confirmed she was in the studio the whole time, but how reliable is he? I have a feeling the beautiful Mrs. Dryden lies behind this in some way. Too many people are in love with her.
I saw her once, years ago, before she was famous in some review. She's certainly got something.
Well, I wonder if Rodney Fleming's another of her conquests. Show him in. I think I'm ready.
Sir?
I hope I'm ready.
A jolly place you've got here, Inspector.
Good morning, Mr. Fleming.
I like your view, but can't you bribe the English fascists to burn down County Hall on the same principles the Nazis burned the Reichstag?
If you'd like to sit down.
Oh, thanks. Oh, don't pay any attention to my chatter. I'm always professionally bright in the mornings. May I smoke?
By all means. I'm afraid I don't keep Egyptian cigarettes.
Oh, so you've observed I don't smoke gaspers, my dear Holmes. You restore my faith in the police. Bring out the handcuffs.
What do you mean, Mr. Fleming?
Well, I can't expect to get out of Scotland Yard without cuffs on my wrists, can I? After all, look at me. Promising new playwright according to the press? That's almost enough to hang a man by itself. No visible means of support except one successful play, now closed in the West End and making the rounds of the provinces. A second play bought for theatre production by Leo Dryden. The radio play, of course, and various journalistic efforts. Apart from that, what do you know about me, Inspector, except that I was on the scene of the crime and uncomfortably close to where it was committed? If you don't arrest me, I'll have a question asked in the house.
Very amusing, Mr. Fleming, but time runs on. You'll answer a few questions, I hope.
Delighted, Inspector. Turn on your third degree. What do I get? Rubber truncheons, fire hose?
I'll tell you when you start refusing to answer.
Touché.
Perhaps you could tell me a bit about your background.
We intended for chartered accountancy. Disliked the notion heartily, so drifted onto the stage. Scraped a living in the provinces for a few years. I lived in the same digs as Julian Caird on one of those tours, and we became friends. Then I wrote a play which caught on.
I saw it at the Fortune. Enjoyed it very much.
Oh, thank you.
And why did you write The Scarlet Highwayman?
Oh, several reasons. There's no advertisement in the world like having a play broadcast. Leo Dryden's accepted my second stage play. Means to do it in the autumn, if you don't hang him instead.
We'll try not to.
Sorry, bad taste. I wrote Leo a lush part in the radio play. It's good publicity for my stage play. And I wanted to show Julian I could master all his infernal technicalities at my first shot. So I went away for a fortnight and wrote The Scarlet Highwayman.
I see. Well, suppose we go on to the actual night of the crime. Now, you sat in the 6A listening room, not in the drama control room with the producer.
I wanted to see the actors playing my scenes as much as possible.
Was that the only reason?
Well, no. I was expecting a call from Leeds. It was rather important. Apparently, 6A is the only listening room on those floors with a phone.
This was the call from your brother?
Oh, that's the one.
Would you mind giving me a few more details about it?
Not at all, Inspector. I'm at your mercy. George, my brother, is managing the regional tour of my first play. We've had a certain amount of bother with the actor playing the father-in-law. He's quite the wrong type, and George wanted to rewrite the part to suit the actor.
Is that unusual?
Unfortunately not. I told George to go ahead and alter the part as he saw fit, but to ring and let me know the details before it was actually restaged. Time was tight, and he had to ring me at the BBC.
Do you know exactly when the call came through?
Didn't we go through this before?
I'd like a few more details.
Well, the phone rang just as the ballroom scene was ending. That's the scene before the murder.
How long did your call last?
Oh, I can't tell you exactly. At some point, Julian poked his head round the door, something about a return light failing. I didn't pay much attention to him. I suppose the call finished about 2 minutes after that.
Would you say you had about 6 minutes in all?
Oh, probably. Oh, I expect that's important. The times always are in murder mysteries.
Quite. I believe it was your suggestion to engage Sidney Parsons for a part in the play.
Yes.
How did you come to know him?
Oh, he understudied in the West End in my first play. He wrote to me afterwards saying he was hard up and I thought he might do for the jailer, so I suggested him to Julian.
I see. Well, I think that's all, Mr. Fleming.
Look, seriously, you don't really suspect Leo, do you?
I'm afraid I can't comment.
It's not just that he's putting on my next play. I'm sure he couldn't do such a thing. You'll probably find out that the murderer is someone you haven't even thought of yet.
I want to speak to Isabel alone.
Please, Stuart.
And you can't stop me, Dryden.
If you don't get out of my house, I'll have you thrown out.
Isabel?
Perhaps this isn't the time.
Oh, very well. I had something to tell your wife. Something that might have saved you both some pain. As it is, to hell with you, Dryden.
What did he mean?
I don't know. But I know I'm frightened, Leo.
He's just a damned fool, besotted with you.
If only you'd talk to Inspector Spears. Tell him the truth.
I'm not sure. I know what the truth is.
Then tell him what you know.
I know you should never have got involved with that devil Parsons.
I wasn't involved with him.
Well, he's dead now, and I'm not sorry.
Leo.
Best thing that ever happened. I'd gladly shake the hand of the man who strangled him.
Higgins must have done it.
Have you been playing the private detective guy?
I know where he's lodging. It's an awful hole, above a greengrocer's in Gentile Street.
How on earth did you get the address?
The house superintendent's secretary. She was too busy with 1,000 other things to ask why I wanted it.
Lucky for you.
I've been down there, Gentile Street. I quizzed the greengrocer's wife about Higgins. Apparently, he only goes out at night. I'd like to know where.
I hardly dare ask how you're going to find out.
I need to watch the place. I've got the evening off. I thought I'd spend it watching Higgins' window from a greasy cafe across the road. I can get a perfect view.
Rather you than me. Don't get yourself arrested.
I'll try not to. I need company that won't arouse suspicion in a place like that. What I need is a tart with a heart of gold, and I know exactly where to find her.
A tart?
I'm desperate, Pat.
And Pat always said you were such a nice young man.
All you have to do is dress up, slap on all that makeup you got left over from the run of the Viennese Hussar, and chatter in a loud voice.
No, just like me.
Shut up, Topsy.
Pretend you're auditioning for one of Cochrane's racier reviews.
I should be so lucky. Well, a CB hasn't been in touch for ages. Of course I'll do it, Guy. But don't be mean. Let's take Topsy with us.
I'm not sure.
If you don't, you're a skunk. And don't forget, I knew Isabel Dryden when she was just a girl in the chorus like me. She was human then. I'd like to help get her and her husband out of trouble if I can.
I don't know about two of you. I'll guarantee to look after one, all right, but there's just a chance it might turn risky.
Oh, come off it. My middle name's Risky, isn't it, Pat? Risky and frisky and a little drop of whiskey. I'm the girl for you.
I can see I've no alternative.
But won't that policeman of yours object to this?
He won't know, and I won't tell him. Scotland Yard needs a breakthrough, and we're going to provide it.
Mr. Evans, I'm grateful you asked for this interview.
I've something vital to tell you, Spears.
All in good time. First of all, I'd like to ask you some questions.
Oh, very well.
I gather you were working late in your office on the night of the tragedy.
I was.
Is that usual?
Perfectly. During the day, I'm liable to perpetual interruptions. I frequently return to the BBC after dinner and work in my office.
I see.
Did you know Sidney Parsons?
Never set eyes on the man.
A Mr. Dryden?
I've the honour to be a friend of Mrs. Dryden's. That's why I wanted to see you.
Do you know Mr. Fleming?
I met him in Caird's office, conceited ass.
You don't like him?
I don't dislike him, no reason to, except he's achieved fame by writing facile bad work. As for the Scarlet Highwoman, Caird has a weakness for that romantic toshery.
When did you first hear of the tragedy?
I met Caird on my way back from the canteen. I gathered something was wrong. He was in an odd state, even for him. I made inquiries at the reception desk.
I see. And?
Look, Inspector, Dryden's your man.
That's a pretty serious accusation, Mr. Evans.
I don't give a damn how serious it is. As I told you, I'm a friend of his wife's. She's been good enough to ask me to their flat on one or two occasions.
I don't quite see the relevance.
Wait a minute. Dryden treats her like dirt. He's inconsiderate, jealous, abominably rude to her in front of other people. He's just the type of man who could murder someone.
I'm afraid that's no proof.
Then what are these?
Gloves?
I found these in a cupboard used by the studio attendant, Higgins. The cupboard's just outside 7C. Your people probably didn't search it, because when it's closed, it's flush with the wall, hardly noticeable.
You're saying these gloves belong to Leopold Dryden?
Who else? Any actor in London would confirm it. Look at the stitching, the scalloped wrists. No one but a farceur like Dryden would be seen dead in the things.
These are important evidence, and I'm grateful you brought them to me.
My duty, Inspector.
I'd have been even more grateful still if you'd pointed out the cupboard and let the police find them in the normal way. I shouldn't be too free and easy with your accusations against Mr. Dryden. For that, you need cast-iron proof, and that's what I'm looking for.
If you can't hang Dryden without it, then I'll find you cast-iron proof, Inspector. I'll find it.
Higgins is coming out now, heading for that pub.
Oh, this is just like the film!
Except in real life!
Come on, let's follow him, and let's not be quiet about it. The louder we are, the less suspicious he'll be.
So, where are we, Sergeant? Higgins had opportunity and a possible motive. But with these gloves coming to light, we may have to arrest Dryden. He certainly had opportunity, and I think the motive lies with his wife. And what about Caird?
He had opportunity, being on that floor at just the right time.
But no motive we can find. Fleming apparently didn't have the opportunity, even though he was right on the spot. But he knew Parsons, so there might be a motive to be uncovered. But what about Isabel Dryden?
Well, as you say, sir, I think the motive for the murder lies with her.
Yet MacDonald swears she never left the studio. I've looked into his background, and there's no reason not to trust him.
And what about that piece of paper?
Yes, a burnt screw of paper with "Your darling Isabel" written in Parsons' handwriting. It's pretty damning, isn't it? If only we knew who it was addressed to.
Dryden's the obvious candidate.
Well, if we're going to be obvious. And then there's Stuart Evans, who's obviously madly in love with Isabel. Well, at the moment, about the only person we can discount with any certainty is young Guy Bannister.
What a delightful evening. From greasy cafe to smoky bar.
And tepid beer.
Sorry, girls. I'm afraid I've led you on a wild goose chase.
Higgins hasn't shifted from the bar since he got here.
3 large whiskies already. He'll pass out soon.
It doesn't look as if he's going anywhere, does it?
Yes, it does. He's putting on his hat.
Oh, come on. Let's see where he's off to now. Straight home.
He doesn't behave like an evil criminal, does he?
Not much. Tucked up in bed by 11.
He's left the door on the latch.
Too drunk to lock it.
Look, you girls cut off home. I'll go up and interview Mr. Higgins.
What do you take us for? The girls are sent back.
Or a couple of aunts from children's hour.
You go first and we'll follow.
Right.
Okay, Chief. Let's get going.
Don't follow me too close. And if there's a row, don't imitate the pictures. Don't stand about watching. Nip out and call the police.
It smells. Oh, stale greens. I remember that smell from Diggs in Norwich.
Come on. Can you hear anything?
Not a thing. He's probably asleep. Unconscious, anyway.
No, there's a light under his door. I don't think...
All right, Sergeant. You can cover the body now. Mr. Bannister, I should arrest you.
On what charge?
I can think of any number. Being a silly young fool comes first.
It wasn't Guy's fault. We were all in it together.
Then I should have you all arrested. What exactly happened?
We were just outside the door when we heard a shot. I burst in and found Higgins.
It was horrible. His head...
I told you not to look. I checked the room for an intruder. The next moment, two policemen rushed in. God knows where they came from.
We've been watching Higgins since the murder. We're not complete fools, Bannister.
Then why didn't you stop another murder?
I don't think it was murder.
What did the note say?
Note?
There was a note on the mantelpiece. A suicide note, I suppose. A confession. It's gone now. One of your chaps must have taken it.
How observant of you in the circumstances. Yes, we've got the note. It's evidence, and we'll keep its contents to ourselves for the moment.
Guy, I don't want to seem unbearably wet, but do you think you could take us home before I'm sick?
Oh, I'm sorry, of course. Looks like the case is closed anyway.
I'm not so sure about that. I don't think poor Higgins has solved anything with that bullet. Anything at all.
Well, I'm sorry. That was as much of the inquest as I could bear if I wasn't to be put off my lunch.
Oh, you should have stayed a bit longer. I heard Leo behaving like a lunatic. I left after that. I imagine it's still grinding on. What have you ordered?
Fried sole, followed by lamb cutlets.
Oh, not very original, but twill serve. If it wouldn't look so damnably ostentatious, I'd stand as a bottle of champagne. I need it.
But what did Leo say?
Well, I'm beginning to believe he's either frightened about something else, or he really did it. He pretended he'd been too seedy that evening to remember anything much about it. When he was asked why he went up to the 7th floor for fresh air instead of going outside the studio tower on the 6th, he said, "I suppose subconsciously I thought it'd be fresher higher up." Well, I ask you.
How did Isabel stand it?
I hardly noticed. I didn't like to look at her too much. Didn't want to embarrass her. And she sat through it, and as far as I could see, never turned a hair. Leo was doing all his stuff. Jaw thrust out, upper lip stiffened, one eyebrow lifted, all the tricks.
Your fried soul, sir.
Oh, thanks.
I suppose it'll be Higgins' inquest next. Suicide while I've unsound mine.
And that'll end the Parsons case. Higgins must have done it. Then killed himself from remorse.
It's too easy, Julian. It's altogether too easy.
Well, it's what all this morning's papers were hinting at.
Of course, if the police want a solution at any price, it gives them a convenient way out. Even after Leo's performance today.
Julian!
It's your friend Bannister. I wonder if he's found yet another dead body. He does seem to make a habit of it.
Julian, the inquest has just finished.
And you're still at liberty.
I beg your pardon?
I was just thinking, suppose you murdered Parsons, and Higgins saw you, and you shot him last night before he could grass on you.
Take no notice, Guy. What was the verdict?
Oh, murder by person or persons unknown. That's not the interesting bit. When Leo tried to leave, he was arrested.
Let me out of here! I demand to speak to the commissioner! I demand to see my solicitor! I may not have committed murder yet, but if you don't let me out, I swear I will do so. Let me out at once, I tell you! Guard! 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 Guard!
I don't understand it, Guy. Spears seems to have disappeared off the face of the earth.
I could track him down.
No, I think your days as a private detective are numbered. But we have to find him somehow, convince him that Leo couldn't have done it. Oh, excuse me. General. Yes, I see, sir. Yes, of course. Yes, right away. I'll bring Bannister along. Yes, goodbye. That was the general.
I gathered.
Apparently, Inspector Spears is downstairs. He'd like us to join him.
Come in, Keir. Bannister, take a chair.
Thank you, sir.
Inspector Spears wanted the two of you in on this. Can't imagine why. Now, I want you both to understand, I don't consider it your business to try and do the job of the police. You've got plenty to do here.
I quite understand.
Bannister, no more mischief.
No, sir.
I've got the note that was in Higgins' room. A farewell message he left for his girlfriend, Effie. Effie, this is just a line to wish you goodbye and to say I'm sorry for all the trouble and pain I have caused you.
loving you all the time as I do. I can't stick it any longer. They keep following me around, and the noises won't stop in my head. I'm not afraid of going out, but I don't want people to think as how I might have killed that Mr. Parsons. You know we'd agreed to meet that night, so please tell the police and let me go out with a clear name. I can't think of more to say, so we'll now draw to a close. Joe.
Poor devil.
When I interviewed Effie previously, she denied there'd been any arrangement for her and Higgins to meet that night. Then, later, she confessed that Higgins had sent her down a note in the afternoon, asking her to meet him in an office on the 7th floor. He wanted to talk things over, but she was afraid of losing her job, so didn't go. There's no reason to disbelieve her story, so now we've released her.
Poor little beast. You're not going to make her suffer for this, are you, sir?
No, certainly not.
Well, Mr. Bannister, I thought you'd like to hear that, after all your efforts. I ought to be pretty angry with you, but no real harm's been done, so we'll let it go at that.
Thank you, Inspector.
So you think this puts Higgins out of the picture?
I think so. One suspect less, that's all we get out of it.
But what about Dryden? Why on earth have you arrested him?
No, I don't suppose the Inspector's about to tell us.
Well, I don't mind, as long as you both keep it to yourselves. There are two reasons. First, there's a great deal of unpleasant evidence against Mr. Dryden. And secondly, I hope now he's been arrested, he'll realise he has to open his mouth and answer questions.
Dryden's a stubborn devil, Inspector.
Well, sir, if he won't answer the questions, perhaps his wife will. There's a wall of silence covering those two, and if we can't break it down, I'll begin to think that my instinct was wrong.
Then privately you don't believe Leo's guilty?
I don't. No. That's the other reason I wanted to see you, Ked. You're a friend of Mrs. Dryden's, aren't you?
I hope so.
Well, talk to her. See what you can do. You might tell her I've known men to be hanged on a darn sight less evidence than there is against her husband.
Well, I know Rodney Fleming was going round today to try and cheer her up. I think I'll join him. Just hope I can get Isabel to see sense. Oh, this room always sends a chill through me.
Isabel got him one of those modern designers. Everything had to be white. Walls, cupboards, table, even with damn dried flowers.
Seems even colder without Leo's personality about the place.
Oh, Leo's personality is everywhere. Look at the bookshelves. Straining under a dozen volumes of his cuttings. And what does Isabel have? One rather pathetic scrap.
She's coming.
Perhaps it's time for a bit of truth-telling.
I'm afraid you've got a cold dinner. Leo's manservant walked out on me as soon as he heard about the arrest. Said he couldn't afford to be mixed up in this sort of thing in his profession.
Don't worry about food. We'll take you out, won't we, Rodney?
Of course.
Out? I don't think I'll ever be able to go out again.
Rot.
I used to like people looking at me in restaurants, knowing they were whispering, "That's Isabel Palmer, you know, the girl who married Leo Dryden." Now they ring me up pretending to be sympathetic and really only wanting to satisfy their odious curiosity.
Look, Isabel, can't you make Leo talk?
What do you mean?
Julian means the police only arrested him to try and break this stupid silence.
What I can't bear is that I know it's really my fault.
What do you mean?
If I hadn't lost my head and shown him that silly letter from Parsons, no one would have believed Leo was guilty for a second.
What letter?
It wasn't important, just a stupid scribble. Neither of you believe he did it, do you?
Nor does Inspector Spears, I'm sure. He just wants to help you both. He's not a fool.
Have I been a fool, Ring?
I don't know, sir.
Yeah, well, you've covered yourself there. Have you got the transcript of Parsons' death scene?
Yes, sir.
Well, read it to me, would you?
Oh, will I have to act it at all?
No, just read it as it's written.
So, you're here at last. Didn't I tell you we'd get you one day? Didn't I swear that day you rolled me over in the mud that I'd be even with you yet? Good heavens, you.
No.
Sir?
No, I'm sorry, Ring. No. Read it exactly as it's written. Keep the pauses in.
So, you're here at last. Didn't I tell you we'd get you one day? Didn't I swear that day you rolled me over in the mud that I'd be even with you yet? Good heavens, you.
Let me see it. I'd be even with you yet. Good heavens, you. Yes, I thought as much.
these questions. You two are as bad as the police.
Yeah, but don't you see how important it is?
We must get to the bottom of Leo's behaviour.
I don't think suspicion would have focused on him if he hadn't been so stupid when he was first questioned.
You know what Leo's like, Rodney.
He's damned awkward when he wants to be.
Look here. We've been imagining Leo's kept silent for his own sake. I suppose he didn't shut up like a trap because he thought you might be concerned in the murder, Isabel.
Julian.
Oh, Julian's got a point. Leo wouldn't tell you that, but it might be the reason. Could you have been out of the studio at the same time he was?
I could, but I wasn't. Leo only had to ask Ian MacDonald. He knew I wasn't out of the studio all evening.
Ah, but don't you see? If he'd asked MacDonald, and you had been out of the studio, he'd have drawn suspicion on you. He couldn't risk that.
Better to say nothing.
You must talk to him. When do you see him next?
Oh, God, it's probably those reporters again.
Turn off the light, Julian. I'll have a look out the window.
I can't see anyone.
It's that chap from the BBC, Stuart Evans.
What on earth's he doing here?
The second he heard about Leo's arrest, he rang me up.
I'm sure he did.
He rang three times this afternoon.
Shall I get rid of him?
Would you? I can't see him when I'm feeling like
no,
this.
No, let me. I know how to handle Evans.
And what business is it of yours, Cad?
I've been dining with Isabel. Naturally, she's feeling the strain of Leo's arrest. I'm leaving early for that very reason.
And you wish me to follow your example?
Yes.
My dear Cad, I flatter myself I've seen a good deal more of the world than you have. I think I can guarantee Mrs. Dryden will appreciate a visit from me when she might find your society a little tedious.
Now, that's enough.
Don't push me.
I was trying to be diplomatic. The truth is, she doesn't want to see you.
I'll let her tell me that.
Don't push me.
I'm warning you, Cad.
If you're threatening
me... I've done a good deal of boxing in my time.
Apparently they were scrapping right there in the street, outside Isabel Dryden's flat.
I never thought of Julian Caird as a very physical man.
Evans gave him a black eye. He says he gave Evans worse.
And all for the love of a lady.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I bet it was. Isabel used to be sweet on a man called Evans when we were touring together years ago.
Good God.
I'm sure his name was Evans.
Stuart Evans?
It might have been. As far as I can remember, we always called him by his surname. Don't know why.
But this is incredible.
Why?
Because, Pat, if we can prove that Isabel knew Evans years ago, had an affair with him, I think Parsons was blackmailing her. Maybe Evans was the reason for the blackmail. Which play was it?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Have you got some old programmes? We can go through them.
I don't keep stuff like that, but I bet Isabel does.
Well, Topsy, tomorrow morning you're going to Scotland Yard. We've got to tell Spears.
So Julian was right, my darling.
Yes, my beloved.
Thank God he persuaded me to come.
Thank God.
But how could you think I had anything to do with this horrible murder, Leo?
I know your passionate nature.
Oh, darling.
My love.
To think you endured these days in a prison cell for me.
I could do nothing else.
Now you can tell Inspector Spears what you know.
But I know nothing about the murder.
Exactly. That's what you've got to tell him.
How nice to meet you again under less distracting circumstances, Miss Levine.
Thank you, kind sir.
Topsy has something vital to tell you, Inspector.
Really?
You remember my ideas about Evans?
Perhaps if you'd let Miss Levine do the talking.
Topsy? Yeah. And this isn't one of Guy's ideas. This is a fact.
Go on.
Well, this little girl was on tour with Isabel Dryden, Isabel Palmer in those days, in a play called Overseas. At least I think it was Overseas. It was a one-word title, I do know that, and it was about the sea or holidays.
Get to the meat of it, Topsy.
All right. Well, I don't remember much, of course. You wouldn't expect me to after all this time.
Just tell me what you do remember, Topsy.
The Rover of the Seas, that was it.
Ah.
I think. Anyway, I was the lowest of the low, assistant stage manager. But I got to see things. And I do remember Isabel was having an affair with another member of the company. At least there was a lot of talk. And his name was Evans.
Evans?
There you are. And he's still in love with Isabel.
But why murder Parsons?
Well, when I really thought about it, I could swear that man Parsons was in the company as well.
Are you sure? Well, this is desperately important.
If Parsons knew about the affair, he could have been blackmailing both Isabel and Evans.
To be honest, the more I thought about it last night, the easier it was to think it was another name, not Parsons. But all you have to do is get hold of one of Isabel's old programmes. It'll be on that.
She's just the sort to keep all her old stuff.
Yes, I know that very well. Well, thank you, Topsy.
Oh. Oh, Desert Waves! That was it!
Uh-huh.
Oh, was that another talk?
Yeah, well, thank you both. Can you see yourselves out?
You'll keep me informed of what's going on, Inspector.
Oh, yes, I think I can promise you'll be in on the kill, Mr. Bannister. Ring. Oh, I've just had a very interesting chat with Mr. Bannister and his charming young friend. I think we should pay another visit to Mrs. Dryden.
But why haven't you let Leo go?
Because though he's now talking, he's not saying anything that helps his case.
He knows nothing.
That's probably true, Mrs. Dryden, and I can promise you we're doing all we can to find the real murderer.
Thank you.
Now, I wonder if my sergeant and I could examine some of the books on your shelves.
How dare you! Pretending you want to help Leo and then looking for evidence against him.
I promise you we are not doing that. I can get a warrant, if necessary. But the sooner we find what we're looking for, the sooner your husband will be free.
I'll be in my bedroom, lying down. Call me when you finish.
She can certainly flash those blue eyes, can't she, sir?
Ring, I didn't know you were susceptible.
Right, are these the books?
No, those are Dryden's cuttings in all their glory. No, we're after that slim scrapbook.
There.
Ah, let's see. No, no, no. Ah, here it is. Look, this must be it. Go as you please. Of course. A farce in three acts. Assistant stage manager, Topsy Levine. There's Isabel Palmer as the Honourable Enid Faversham. And yes, Sidney Parsons as Sam Buckley jockey.
No sign of Stuart Evans in the cast.
No, no, but there is Evans the butler, played by Philip Nelson.
Never heard of him.
Well, let's see what his photograph looks like.
Well, I'm damned.
And so is he. I think it's time to gather the cast together at Broadcasting House. Thank you, gentlemen, for agreeing to come here tonight.
Agreeing? Ordered, more like. What's Dryden doing here?
It's good to see you, Leo.
No, Julian, when my innocence has been fully established, then I'll be delighted to shake your hand.
I'm afraid it's rather a tight squeeze in here, but I wanted you all in the drama control room so we could hear the murder over the speaker.
But what actually is the point of all this, Inspector?
Is this really necessary?
I think so, Mr. Caird. Sergeant Ring will play the murderer. And Bannister will play Parsons.
Why should Bannister play Parsons when he might have done it?
I don't intend to discuss it. Bannister is already waiting in 7C. Ring, disappear for the moment.
Sir.
By the time we've finished, we'll find Ring exactly where the murderer was. I think everything will at last be made clear.
I call these methods American. Positively American.
What would you know about it?
The downright
scene was just ending when the light failed. Is that correct, Mr. Caird?
Yes. I jumped out of my chair and dashed down to 6A.
And at that moment, the murderer was silently opening the door of Studio 7C and creeping up behind Sidney Parsons, his gloved hands at the ready.
So, you're here at last. Didn't I tell you we'd get you one day? Didn't I swear that day you rolled me over in the mud that I'd be even with you
yet? Parsons turns, sees his attacker.
Good Evans! You!
My God, it's a frame-up. You've twisted the meaning.
Now, the murderer takes the unmistakable gloves belonging to Leo Dryden and tosses them into Higgins' open cupboard, slamming the door behind him, hoping they'll be found. Meanwhile, Caird has recrossed the listening room and is back here in a moment.
That's how it was.
Yes.
So if Ring's playing the murderer, where is he?
Well, if you'll follow me, gentlemen, I'll show you. And so, where is Ring to be found? Back in the dramatic control panel room? Or in Mr. Stuart Evans' office? In Studio 6A, or perhaps in the listening room attached to Studio 6A?
This play-acting is getting a little tedious.
Tedious isn't the word.
I call it damn sadism.
Mr. Kerr?
Oh, get it over with, Inspector, please.
Very well. Mr. Fleming, would you open the door of the 6A listening room?
Why on earth do you
open it?
Very well.
Yes, George. Thank you. That scene sounds fine to me.
And Mr. Fleming puts down the telephone.
I'm sorry, Inspector. I don't understand. As you can see, I was on the phone to my brother discussing the rewrite of my play. I can hardly be in two places at once.
But you can. You weren't discussing anything with your brother. At precisely 10 o'clock, he put a call through to you. And you asked him to read, without stopping, the entire 3 pages of rewritten dialogue. When the BBC telephonist checked the call, she heard conversation and assumed 2 people were talking, as you meant her to. At my request, your brother was kind enough to post me a copy of the rewrite. I've timed it. The scene lasts almost exactly 6 minutes. And during those 6 minutes, you crept into 7C and murdered Sidney Parsons.
This can't be true.
Why not? Just because he went to the right school.
Be quiet, Evans. And my motive?
Some years ago, you toured with Isabel Dryden in a play and had a passionate affair. Your part was that of Evans, the butler. It was also your nickname, the name Parsons remembered you by. He was blackmailing Isabel about the affair. Soon he might turn on the promising playwright. Even in these days of loose morals, such an affair would be frowned on, might damage your career. And your career is desperately important to you, isn't it, Mr. Fleming?
And Isabel's happiness. I'm sorry, Leo. Shouldn't be carrying a torch for her after all these years.
But to kill a man?
Well, I thought I couldn't at first, but I managed it. And I'll do it again if I have to.
Not me. Don't be an idiot.
I'm afraid it's gone far beyond idiot.
There are police at all the exit points, Mr. Fleming.
Don't move. My God, if anyone moves, I'll shoot him.
How did it go?
Get out of my way, Bannister!
It was Fleming.
Right, this time, Bannister.
He's heading for the tower.
Care! Care! Stay here!
He's a friend of mine!
Rodney, stop! You can't get away! Watch out, Julian!
Oh, there's no way out of here, only the roof!
The roof over me!
What's happening?
Where's he disappeared to?
Through that window, onto the roof.
Can he get away?
I don't know.
Do you really not know, or do you want to give the fellow a chance?
Have it all, Spears. The man's a friend of mine, or was.
I think he's trapped up there.
What about cover?
Not much. Just the towers of the experimental transmitter. It's a bit like a mountain with a precipice on each side.
Right then, I'd better get after him.
What about his gun?
That's all right, kid. I've got one too. Stay here, and if he comes back...
I'd like to come too.
Oh, all right, but keep behind me. What about you, Bannister?
If I can give you a hand...
Oh, that's right, Guy. Join the hunt.
Can you see anything?
Not a lot.
Reminds me of No Man's Land.
Julian! Are you in on the chase?
Careful what you say.
This isn't the ending I'd have written, but I suppose it had a certain panache.
Give up, Rodney, please! Come back in through the window. It's the only way down from here.
Keep your head down, Julian. I don't want to hurt you.
Fleming! For the last time, will you surrender?
Ow!
Bannister, are you all right?
Yes, I think so. It's just my wrist.
Rodney, please don't be a damn fool! Fleming! Drop your gun and put up your hands.
Show to hell!
I'm sorry, Caird. I've no alternative.
My God.
I'm sorry. He would have killed us all.
Would he?
Another death at Broadcasting House?
But this time, we know who the killer is right from the start. Don't we, Inspector?
In Death at Broadcasting House by Val Gielgud and Holt Marble, Julian Caird was played by John Moffat, Rodney Fleming by Jeremy Clyde, Detective Inspector Spears by Peter Salas. The General, Graham Crowden, Guy Bannister, Roger May, Leopold Dryden, William Nye, Isabel Dryden, Diana Quick, Stuart Evans, Julian Glover. Detective Sergeant Ring, Nicky Henson. Topsy, Becky Hindley. Pat, Caroline Strong. Higgins, Gavin Muir. MacDonald, David Holt. The police surgeon, John Hartley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Death at Broadcasting House was dramatized for radio by Sue Rodwell and produced by Glyn Dearman. The play was recorded in Studio 6A, Broadcasting House, London, and directed by Enid Williams. Thank you.